हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 52. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concurs with Srila Jiva Goswami's view that Dravida was ruined by bad association, which was a punishment for his having disrespected Sriman Lakshmana. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti states, however, that the Mainda and Dravida mentioned here are actually the eternal liberated devotees addressed as attendant deities during the worship of Lord Ramachandra. The Lord arranged their degradation, excuse me, he says, to show the evil of the bad association that results from offending great personalities. Thus, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti compares the fall of Dravida and Mainda to that of Jaya and Vijaya. Right? So by dealing improperly with advanced personalities, then one can fall from the position, which means then one will take on bad association. Because if you fall down from your position, then your taste for association changes. Right? Because you're dealing in a bad way, so then you are attracted to associate with those who also don't deal in a proper way. So therefore then Dravida took up the association of Naraka. So then he is a full-on demon. Yes.
Is it like in both cases, Jarita and this Mainda and Vivida, that is just the will of the Lord, or is it also their offense of combination of both?
Means the point is that that this could happen with them just to show the power of, you know, because they're always associated there, so then after whatever they're killed or this or that, they go back to their natural position. Yeah, but it's important to see that bad association is bad, like we see even in Balmasura. Even though he's Varaha and Bhumi Devi's son, by bad association he became a demon. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that, or like this way, Advaitacharya's sons, he has six sons, so three then stayed properly in line, but three took up bad association and became Mayavadis. So the point being is that association has to be seen as very important, because to take up devotional service, you need to associate with devotees. To advance in devotional service, you need the association of devotees. And then to go, once you get to the platform of bhava, to get from bhava to prema, it's only by association of devotees. So the whole process, and then once you come to prema, you'll be rendering service in the association of devotees. So it's always about association with devotees. Does that make sense?
I'm thinking in that context that, like in case of Jayavijaya and other pair, so, like, okay, it's your will, my dear Lord, okay, I'll accept this curse.
That was there, but it's just somehow knows arranged. We don't have to get down into the technical. What to learn for us is don't associate with people who aren't interested in Krishna consciousness. That's the thing, you know. Not trying to figure out if I'm in this position because the Lord willed it, and you know that, like that, that you don't have to worry. Because the point is to correct it. It's the same process, you know. So Jai and Vijay who are the two brothers? No, the last brothers.
Shishupal and
last brothers. Jagai and Madhu. So we see by that process, then the demoniac mentality is killed by association. By getting the mercy of the devotees, then it works. So that's the whole point. By not associating properly, then they fall from their position. By associating properly, then they come to the proper position. So that's what's to learn. How it all happened and back in this, it's not necessary because we're here. It doesn't matter. You know, it's just like you find yourself in the middle of the ocean and a boat comes along and throws you a rope. And you're only willing to grab the rope and climb up the rope if they'll tell you exactly how you got there and this and that and, you know, stuff like that. No, you climb up and then after you can figure it out.
They might be faint to give you the rope.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. And, you know, because we have to be careful that it's not a matter of our ego or our sense of justice that I'm not at fault. Someone else has to be at fault. But that's not the point. You're in this position. The only way to correct it is through proper association. That's the thing to do. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think mental offenses result in bad association.
Mental offenses then will just create impure consciousness. And so then one can get attracted. So one has, the point is one just gives up offenses.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Yes.
All right, so this morning we discussed and figured out finally that prayaschitta doesn't really work.
No, it doesn't.
But then the offense...
But it makes everybody feel good. You know?
But then when we deal with offending the devotees and the holy name, then we beg forgiveness from the devotees, and then Bhakti Kapoor, doing most of the offenses in Harinam Chintamani, he says that you should just try and be absorbed in the holy name itself.
Yes.
So, can we say that still that the action from those offenses, we will have to suffer the old? How is that works? Will we suffer the reaction from?
Well, you have two aspects of reaction.
Yeah.
Means you have the secondary, which means the medium through which the offense was committed, right? Means body, mind, or words. You don't really have another option, right? And so, I say, unless you're a nuclear physicist, then you can have the fourth dimension or, you know, something. But these three is where it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, the fourth aspect is the, because it's polluted consciousness by which you make the offense, then that effect there, then that's what, unless you surrender or beg forgiveness or, you know, take up the chanting and all that, that one's the problem. The other ones aren't actually a problem. It just means it will give you an unfortunate situation. You know, how unfortunate, then it depends on how strong it is. Like we see with the, what was his name? Not Saindava. What was his name?
Sudakshina.
Something with an S. You know. So with him, it ended up destroying the whole city. Like that. Or Ramachandra, then it also destroyed the whole village. So, means that's the kind of thing you can do if it's very, very severe. And then, you know, from there it'll go down. So then, so that aspect, that's the one we're not worried about how that will go down. We're worried that it's up to the Lord, whatever reaction he wants to give or not give, that's up to him. Because we've done something, so then result. But the pollution of the consciousness, that's the one we're worried about. Because that's the one that can distract us from devotional service. So that's why that surrender, that sincere attitude of repentance like that, that's what's going to then correct the consciousness. And then what happens, you know, according to the medium used, then the reaction will come in there. It won't come somewhere else. Does that make sense? You do a physical offense, the result is always physical. It's not going to happen, it's another thing. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Can we say that even though those in the first category, body, mind, and words, the reaction carries in the same medium, but consciousness is always affected by those ones?
Yes. But so I'm saying that's the real problem, is the consciousness. Because we see is when the consciousness drops, then one becomes attracted by bad association. So if you're criticizing devotees, you'll be attracted by people who criticize. You know, have something to say about everybody and everything, have an opinion on everything, you can get together with them, and this one, that one, who looking like this. And so then it'll just go down from there. Does that make sense? Then you take on that sinful mentality. Because we have to understand is that we have, just like we have, okay, there's pious and impious activity. And what we do, what we consider the regular material piety and impiety, right? You follow the rules and all that, that's pious. You don't follow the rules, it's not pious. And then you're following rules that you've made up, then it's just a little bit of piety, but if you follow the rules the Vedic says, then that has some serious piety. And so we'll consider that pious and impious. And then devotional service is something else. It's like the third option, the alternative option. But if we look at it from the actual point, there is only Krishna and there is only his system. So actual piety is devotional service. And not having that interest in devotional service, that's actually sinful. So from that definition, you can be piously following the social rules or the Vedic rules, but only for the purpose of material benefit, that's technically demoniac. You know, because much of the time we'll take it, demoniac means, you know, very rough and gross and everything like that. But you can be very sophisticated. But if it's about sense gratification, that's demoniac. So we have to, for us, then we're looking at, if it's not for Krishna, then that's not important. Right? It's not something we want to get involved with. But at the same time, as then we can see, is that people that are inclined towards certain pious activities, showing them how those connect to Krishna, then they'll move forward. We don't look at, oh, that's demoniac and all that. You know, because if we look at it like that, then what happens is people may accept Krishna consciousness, but they'll accept it without any culture. And then the problem is that they may continue nicely in Krishna consciousness themselves, but they won't necessarily be able to affect much for others being inspired by the level of culture, in that how everything's seen in the spiritual light, how everything's connected, whatever the position. So it won't have the broadness. You may attract others who have that kind of appreciation. They can take up spiritual without culture. But you won't be able to attract a wider range. So it's not your... It means for that individual it's solid, but it will be better if they accept, you know, the secondary aspects that go with it. Some of those. But if you take the secondary without the primary, technically that's demoniac. Because that's what the demons do. They want all the material facility without God. They're even willing to follow the Vedic system because they know it just gives you better facility. So... What about offenses to the holy Dham and the Dhamma? It's the same principle.
Second category?
Sorry?
The two categories are second category.
Second category?
In my notes.
What second category?
To discuss the world.
Means mind does one category and Dravida is the other? Or?
You know, what are you explaining in the notes? Two categories, like body, words, and mind. That is one category where you get according to the situation.
Yeah, but the point is that when you're dealing with Dham Vasis or with the Dham, is it a mental offense? Is it a physical offense? Is it through the intelligence or what you're saying like this? It's the same principle. It doesn't matter where you apply it. Because if you have the name in the devotees, then you have the Dham Vasis, you have the Dham, you have the, you know, like this. You know, like let's say the Lord's paraphernalia for Artik. You don't deal nicely, you throw it in the sink, or, you know, don't wash it until you need it the next day, and all these kind of things. Then it's a physical offense. It'll get a physical reaction. Mm-hmm. So it's just, the point is that offenses come in these three. Right?
Yes.
That's just, and then you apply it wherever you like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. Okay, Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. To avenge the death of his friend, Naraka, the ape, Dravida, ravaged the land, setting fires that burned cities, villages, mines, and cowherd dwellings. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, paying debt to his friend Naraka out of respect, he set fire to the cities, caused damage to the lands around Dwarka, such as Surastra, or Rastra Viplavam, can modify Apachitim. He paid his debt to his friend in the form of causing havoc in the country. The word Vanaraha, monkey, is repeated in this verse from the last verse to emphasize his fickle and evil nature. You know, because you can see monkeys will just do things just because they can. And it's just like sometimes you see in Vrindavan, they'll come down, run through the street, then they'll jump, you know, bounce off the building, yeah, onto the pole, off the building, then get up on the pole, and before they jump back on the roof, they have to shake the pole until it just makes so much noise. There's no need. They're just going on the roof. They have to do it. So he's saying here, they repeated the word Vanaraha because he just has to do it that way. Yeah, because he's a monkey.
Only the male monkeys do that, by
the way. He's a male monkey, so the point is he's doing that. Like
that. Huh? Just
something. Just some important information. Yeah.
The Mayapur monkeys are in exception to the city.
Well, they're a different kind of monkey. Like that. Because the ones we're talking about in Vrindavan, I don't know what they're called.
Makar.
Huh? I mean, I don't know the species.
Makar.
Makar. Oh, makar. Because you have the langurs, or they're really big ones. Yeah, the langurs, they act. Oh, you do have the other ones, but they're farther up. Generally, they hang out.
Which ones are here? With the long tails?
Those are longers. Yeah. They're a little more peaceful. Yeah, yeah. He's like, if you have a bunch of bananas, you can walk up to them, they'll sit there, and you can hand them one, and they'll eat it, and then you can hand them another one. But the other monkeys, they see you coming with the bananas, they'll attack and steal them all. And even if you're handing them one banana, they'll take that, but they'll look at all the others. They can't just eat the banana you give them. Like that. So it's just a matter of how sophisticated they are. So the point is, you know, they get enthusiastic than the monkeys. So. The order is from greater to lesser. Cities, villages, mines, and cowherd villages. If he destroyed the largest cities, what to speak of the other places? Right, because the bigger cities are much bigger, more sophisticated. So to destroy that means you have to put in a lot of effort. You know, the mines, because of their dug and that takes more effort also. But let's say a village is just a simple house to, you know, knock it over or light it on fire or something. It's pretty easy to do. Does that make sense? You know, they're smaller, there's less people. So it just means that he's being very thorough, you could say. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, once Dvidivida tore up a number of mountains and used them to devastate all the neighboring kingdoms, especially the province of Anarta, wherein dwelt his friend's killer, Lord Hari. So he especially then the area where Krishna was living then made trouble there. You know, you tear up a mountain into big pieces and then you take those and chuck them at the cities and all that. So, yeah. Another time he entered the ocean and with the strength of 10,000 elephants churned up its water with his arms and thus submerged the coastal regions. The wicked ape tore down the trees and the hermitage of exalted sages and contaminated their sacrificial fires with his feces and urine. Just as a wasp imprisons smaller insects, he arrogantly threw both men and women into caves in a mountain valley and sealed the cave shut with boulders. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, once while Dravida was thus engaged in harassing the neighboring kingdoms and polluting women of respectable families, he heard very sweet singing coming from Raivataka Mountain. So he went there. There he saw Sri Balaram, the lord of the Yadus, adorned with a garland of lotuses and appearing most attractive in every limb. He was singing amidst a crowd of young women. And since he had drunk Varuni liquor, his eyes rolled as if he were intoxicated. His body shone brilliantly as it behaved like an elephant in rut. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, To show how Balaram was a cause of the women singing, his pastimes are described. But as a cause of the pastimes, his dress and appearance are described in two verses. So, he heard the women singing, so he went there. So then, why were they singing? Because they were with Balaram. So that point is made. That's why it's brought there. Because that attracted. But at the same time, having said that, now you see it spends two verses explaining how nicely Balaram looked and how he was, what he was doing. Right? So, because before it was about Balaram. The question was about what things did Balaram do. So then he'll focus on those aspects. Right? As the lord of the Yadus, he was full of all powers and the highest happiness. Among the Yadus, it was impossible to harm him. He enjoyed with Revati and others at this place, Ramam. Describing his dress, his beauty is indicated. He was in the midst of a group of women, including Revati. His sweetness is described. His eyes rolled with intoxication. His power is described. He shone brighter than the sun with his bodily effulgence, strength, and jeweled ornaments. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, the mischievous ape climbed a tree branch and then revealed his presence by shaking the trees and making the sound kila kila. The BBT purport mentions, the word saka mriga indicates that the ape Dvidvida, like ordinary apes, was naturally inclined to climb trees. Srila Prabhupada writes, this gorilla by the name Dvidvida could climb up on the trees and jump from one branch to another. Sometimes he would jerk the branches, creating a particular type of sound, kila kila, so that Lord Balaram was greatly distracted from the pleasing atmosphere. So he was just trying to make trouble. Right? It means he could just go and sit in the tree, right? Like that. But no, he has to make trouble. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. When Lord Baladev's consorts saw the ape's impudence, they began to laugh. They were, after all, young girls who were fond of joking and prone to silliness. Footnote 15. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, they laughed loudly, conspicuously, vijahasuhu, because they were fond of laughing, since by nature youthfulness they were fickle. They did not laugh with bad intentions, nor did they laugh out of fear, since they were Balaram's consorts. Right, so just anything different or unique or strange, then Prabhupada mentions that the young girls will always laugh at it. That's just the nature. That's what they do. Anything different or weird, they just laugh. Okay. Even as Lord Balaram looked on, Dvidvida insulted the girls by making odd gestures with his eyebrows, coming right in front of them and showing them his anus. Okay, 12 and 13. So the Prabhupada writes, the gorilla was so rude that even in the presence of Balaram, he began to show the lower part of his body to the women. And sometimes he would come forward to show his teeth while moving his eyebrows. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti states that Dvidvida would come right up to the women and move about, urinate, and so on. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, right? So, a monkey. Angered, Lord Balaram, the best of fighters, hurled a rock at him. But the cunning ape dodged the rock and grabbed the Lord's pot of liquor. Right, so it's just, you know, you pick up something, you throw it, and then the ape's supposed to move and go back into the tree. Right? Further infuriating Lord Balaram by laughing and by ridiculing him, wicked Dvidvida then broke the pot and offended the Lord even more by pulling at the girl's clothing. Thus the powerful ape, puffed up with false pride, continued to insult Sri Balaram. Right? So, again, thinking that he's intoxicated, that he's not going to be able to do much, then he's taking advantage. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, though Balaram was the best among fighters because of his strength, and though angry, he struck the ape with a rock, not his club, because of the ape's previous bhakti. Because right? He'll remember him. Dravida doesn't know really what's going on, but he remembers. The ape's bad behavior is described. Quickly, the ape avoided the rock and attacked. The rascal made Balaram angry and laughed at him. The ape was wicked because he pulled the gopis' garments from their bodies and ripped them. He insulted Balaram, who had the greatest strength, Balam, since he was completely overcome by pride. This was because he was strong. So he was strong, he was proud of that. So therefore he insulted Balaram. He was not thinking. He was just thinking that he's so strong, what can Balaram do? Yes.
And you mentioned that he defended Lakshman from Balaram.
Yes, like that. But Balaram remembers his service that he's rendered to Lord Ramachandra. That's why he just threw a rock instead of just going over and threw him and killing him on the spot. But because Dvidvita keeps going, therefore then he'll decide time to get rid of it. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Balaram saw the ape's rude behavior and thought of the disruptions he had created in the surrounding kingdoms. Thus the Lord angrily took up his club and plow weapon, having decided to put his enemy to death. Because otherwise he's done so much. It's not that he's just coming and harassing, behaving like a monkey. He's come in and unnecessarily harassed all these different cities and villages and everything, creating trouble. So then, seeing that, and along with what he's doing now at this point, then he's decided, okay, then he'll have to kill him. Right? The BBT purport mentions, the word avinayam means without humility. Dravida, completely lacking in modesty and humility, shamelessly performed the most wicked activities. Lord Balaram knew of the great disturbances Dravida had caused to people in general, apart from the vulgar behavior the ape was exhibiting in the Lord's own presence. The offensive ape would now have to die. So not only is he being vulgar in front of the Lord and the gopis, but he's done all these things to everyone else. Because if it's just harassed him, he can just get rid of him. But he's creating trouble for everybody. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Mighty Dvidvita came forward to do battle. Uprooting a salt tree with one hand, he rushed towards Balaram and struck him on the head with the tree trunk. But Lord Sankarsana remained as motionless as a mountain and simply grabbed the log as it fell upon his head. He then struck Dravida with his club named Sunanda. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, Balaram was motionless like a mountain. This indicates that he was very heavy. Balaram again and again tolerated his offenses, since he remembered that previously Dvidvita had served Rama. He countered the tree with his hand, or plow, because he was a member of the Chaturvyuha, Sankarsana, and directly the Lord, Bhagavan. Thus he struck Dvidvita. Or Balaram was qualified to grab and strike at the same time. He was full of all powers, Bhagavan, and was non-different from Krishna, Sankarsana. So he's either just stopping it and then attacking, or he's able to stop and attack at the same time. Right? Because he's the Lord. So all these fighting techniques he'll know.
Mm-hmm. He was meant for Chaturvyuha, Sankarsana, and directed the Lord Bhagavan. So when one says that Balaram is already Bhagavan, it includes Chaturvyuha. Then why is he mentioned separately that he's Sankarsana and Chaturvyuha?
Because we may just think of him as the Chaturvyuha, not as Bhagavan. Or as Bhagavan, not the Chaturvyuha. So it's just bringing out these different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the Supreme Lord, but at the same time being Sankarsana, all the manifestations of the spiritual material world are expanding from him. Because Sankarsana is who expands, you know, and then the Chaturvyuha, and then we have Vasudeva, then is that combination that performs his pastimes. Like that. So, as servant, then he's the one who expands.
Mm-hmm.
Means if you're looking at it that you want to see him in his subservient position, and the great grandeur of the Lord, then you can show that Vasudeva is the one expanding. And Sankarsana is then part of that expansion. So Vasudeva expands, and then from him comes Sankarsana Prajumna Aniruddha.
Mm-hmm.
But because you have the other aspect, is that since he sees himself as a servant of Vasudeva, therefore he's expanding, creating the environment, creating everything there, so that then Vasudeva expanding, then he can enjoy the situation or the creator, rather than Vasudeva has to do it himself. It's just a matter of which way you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at it more from Aishvarya, you'll look at it the Vasudeva, and if you're looking at, yeah, but both are correct. You know. Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, struck on the skull by the Lord's club, Dvidvita became brilliantly decorated by the outpour of blood, like a mountain beautified by red oxide. Ignoring the wound, Dvidvida uprooted another tree. Stripped it of leaves by brute force and struck the Lord again. Now enraged, Lord Balaram shattered the tree into hundreds of pieces, upon which Dvidvida grabbed yet another tree and furiously hit the Lord again. This tree, too, the Lord smashed into hundreds of pieces. But it doesn't mean that when he says, and furiously hit the Lord, it doesn't necessarily mean that he actually hit him. That's his intent. He's taken it to hit the Lord, and then the Lord defends himself. And even if it does hit him, it doesn't do anything. It just smashes to pieces. While Dvidvida, when he's hit by the Lord's weapon, you see then he gets an injury and then blood is coming and everything like that. But Balaram, nothing. Thus fighting the Lord, who again and again demolished the trees he was attacked with, Dvidvida kept on uprooting trees from all sides until the forest was left treeless. The angry ape then released a rain of stones upon Lord Balaram, but the wielder of the club easily pulverized them all. The BBT purport mentions. Srila Prabhupada writes, when no more trees were available, Dvidvida took help from the hills and threw large pieces of stone, like rainfall upon the body of Balaram. Lord Balaram, in a great sporting mood, began to smash those big pieces of stone into mere pebbles. Right? So the Lord has fun doing that. Means so you can see is the modern thing. Someone throws an object and someone else with something then hits it. Like that. But we are not able to smash it into pieces. But, you know. Even today there are many sports wherein people enjoy striking a ball or similar object with a stick or a bat. This sporting propensity exists originally in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who playfully, Lilaya, pulverized the deadly boulders hurled at him by the powerful Dvidvida. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, Dvidvida, the most powerful of apes, now clenched his fists at the end of his palm tree-sized arms, came before Lord Balaram and beat his fist against the Lord's body. Footnote 16. Sukadeva, remembering Rohini's love for him, calls Balaram the son of Rohini. The furious lord of the Yadavas then threw aside his club and plow with his bare hands, and with his bare hands hammered a blow upon Dvidvida's collarbone. The ape collapsed, vomiting blood. Right, because he then stopped using weapons. As long as he used weapons, Balaram used weapons. When he stopped using weapons and just was using hand to hand, then Balaram did the same. The ape collapsed, vomiting blood. When he fell, O tiger among the Kurus, Raivataka Mountain shook along with its cliffs and trees, like a wind-tossed boat at sea. Ah. In the heavens, the demigods, perfect mystics and great sages cried out, victory to you, obeisances to you, excellent, well done, and showered flowers upon the Lord. Footnote 17. The best of the devatas, like Indra, shouted, very good. Each of them shouted these words because of bliss, devotion, and astonishment. Or, according to their bhava, devatas shouted, victory. Jiva and Mukta shouted, obeisance to you, and sages shouted, very good. Having thus killed Dvidvida, who had disturbed the whole world, the Supreme Lord returned to his capital as the people along the way chanted his glories. Right? So Dvidvida came up and started pounding Balaram on the chest, but nothing happened. But Balaram hits him on the collarbone and that's it, he's finished. Like that. You know, so. And then all these great personalities said, you know, so many things were said, and then all these things are nicely said, but at the same time is then you can identify who said what. It's just like in the Bhagavatam it'll say these personalities are there and the gopis are there, they said all these prayers to Krishna, right? And then so how they said all these things to Krishna, and so then we just know that they were said, but then we see is that the acharyas then point out who they are and everything. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. God. You look extremely familiar. Yeah, very good. Achyut Govinda. You want to come and sit, or you're just...
He told me he was giving a class, so I said, please you take lesson.
Oh, okay. Okay. You'll be here for some time? Oh, come for the program and everything. Yeah. Okay. And then where do you go back to? Back to Calcutta. Very good. Very good. Yeah, very long time. Thank you. How did you see? No problem.
Do you remember him, Mara?
Yeah.
Before I was kid now, but I was 6-7 years old. I don't care.
Saffron devotees head pujari.
Okay.
From last 25 years Adagal, every day he dresses and Mangalarti and Bhoga.
Okay.
Bhogarti he does.
Okay.
Achyut
Govinda.
He's staying in the Prabhupada's birthplace. So the place which we purchased, which was the home of Prabhupada's grandmother.
Okay.
There he's staying, just maintaining the place.
He's taking care of that place.
Oh, okay. He's just maintaining the place.
Yeah, there's one of the many Wallas from when the school was on that side.
He was, when he was younger, during the Adhira and Prabhupada's time, he used to do a lot of service in Calcutta Temple.
Oh, in Calcutta Temple.
Now he's older.
Okay. Right. Yeah, he said he came when he was 5 or 6, or something, maybe 6 or 7 or something. Srila Sanatana Goswami concludes, he was praised by his relatives or by all people, Janahi, with devotion, indicating him as the Lord, some, or being praised in this way by the best of devatas and sages. He entered the city with Revati and others, Janahi. Right? So in other words, the people are praising, or he entered with his people, you know. While people celebrated with songs, Avishat. Right? So, the whole point is that these verses can mean all these things. Because sometimes people complain, oh, but the word would be generally used in this way, but Prabhupada's translated in another way. It's because it means all those things. It's not that it just means one or two. That's the problem, is all one knows is Moni or Williams. That then one won't know the wide range of things of how it's being used. Because that's the point of poetics, is that much of the time you choose, you know, a little bit more obscure ways, or you'll say something in one way that it does two things at once. So it's a very common thing in the Vedic. But it's not that it means either one can be obvious and one hidden, or it can be just two different ways that it can be applied. Does that make sense? So in these general kind of things, it would generally have these variety of meanings. Only when you're talking about, let's say, Krishna and the gopis or something, then it might have a external meaning and an internal meaning. Because it certain meanings just aren't public. Does that make sense? But in this case, because it's being said and all that nicely, then we see that you can just have both these meanings. So it can have a very wide range. That's why sometimes you see is that a small verse may have a huge translation by the acharyas. Because the words can mean so much, and all these different meanings are all connected. And so they'll put it together and show the expanse of the pastime. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Morning, we encountered the word samahita. That word is in the last loka before Prahlad Maharaj's prayers begin. Manasa su samahita. His mind was very nicely composed. But here Prabhupada giving some other nice meaning to that word. Yes. Same word.
Yeah, so it has so many things that it can be applied. That's the nice thing about Sanskrit. It can be used in a wide variety of range. So it has those roots and it has those meanings. So it works very nicely. Plus, you have so much grammar that can be applied, so you can get so much poetics out of it. So depending upon the various languages, they have a more or less degree of this. Like that, the Sanskrit will always have the most. Yeah, faith, conviction, composed. Because the point is, how can it be composed unless it's actually connected to Krishna? Because otherwise, if it's not connected to Krishna, it'll be all over the place. It may appear that they have some focus, but because the focus is about some material benefit, it's not actually focused, because it from moment to moment can be changing. But when it's focused on the Lord, that means you have to have that faith. And so that steadiness, then we'll have that conviction, we'll have that peacefulness of the mind, all these things will come from it. That's the whole point, is the Sanskrit, all these are connected. One quality is always connected with all the others.
The beauty was that the root meaning of the samadhi was conviction, but the other two meanings of samadhi and samadhi was offering it to Krishna and then Vaya Lakshmi. So both meant samadhi only. So that was a beautiful explanation that you gave, how it goes through devotional service.
Yes.
Maharaj, he was explaining when Prabhu came about the different explanations for different categories of people.
Yes, the same principle is that all these things are said, so we'll just think that the demigods just said all these things. But and that's works. But at the same time we see is the acharyas, then they'll point out who said what exactly. You know, so here they mention the Devatas said this, then the Jivan Muktas said that, the sages said this, and like that, just in the same way as we saw with the gopis when they came, when Uddhava Prabhu came, then different groups came forward, or I think the eight different presidents, showing which different gopis were saying what. It's just that, you know, they have more of an understanding so they can appreciate who's saying what. So that's the point, is that from the acharyas, then that's how we are going to gain. That's why it's always, we approach Shastra through the acharyas. Because without that, what's the point of mental speculation? We may get something and then after that we just want to continue with our own speculation. It's not actually going to work for us. Yes?
It seems that the acharya are very close to the
It means when you know Krishna, you know everything. That's the whole point. So whether they are hearing from someone else or whether they're there itself, the point is the liberated person is not going to speak something that doesn't have the validity. So exactly what that means, it's not because they're there, that's why they know. It's because they're connected to Krishna, that's why they know. Because otherwise, Kamsa was there also, or here, Dvidvida was there, you know. But he was not catching, you know, like that first two verses explained how attractive Balaram looked and how he was interacting and that. He doesn't see that. He just sees, you know, here's the guy that, you know, is connected with the guy that killed his brother, you know, his friend. So he doesn't actually see the Lord as such. Otherwise, if he understood he's God and his supreme position, would he go there and harass like that? No. You don't go up to God's consorts and start, you know, showing your teeth and making faces and moving your eyebrows. You just don't do that. You know, it's not. We've never seen that as one of the nine processes of devotional service. You know. After Padasevana, there's making faces. No, it's not one of the. How you say serving the paraphernalia, making faces at the paraphernalia? No, it's not part of it. So, therefore, then that's the important point. You understand? Because sometimes they try to bring out the literal aspect, but the literal doesn't actually have as much. As the bringing out the literal meaning of the secondary. But when you bring out the literary of the primary, that's actually the most important. So we see the acharyas always bring that out, and it makes it more poetic. You know, like Prabhupada said, it showed the lower part of his body. You know, don't have to get into detail, you know, like that. But, you know, we see that some have to give you the exact, you know, medical terminology of, you know, what's being shown. You know, it's not necessary, because poetics, you don't have to do that. So that's the thing. It's not because of the secondary. It's because of the primary aspect. He's disrespecting the Lord, which he did before. So that desire seed to disrespect the Lord, which he did to Lakshman because of his pride and his strength, then it can be done again. Because once you have a desire seed is created, then that creates, I mean, you a desire seed is there. You apply that seed, it sprouts. But at the same time, it produces another one of those. Right? So he'll have more of that. So that's what's going on. And so that's manifest through the secondary form of his behaving like a monkey and being inappropriate, rude behavior. But it's not the rude behavior that's the main thing. It's the attitude that creates the rude behavior. Right? Now, if we said that there was, somebody's there with all his ladies, and a 3-year-old comes walking in naked and making faces at everybody there, then what would we say? We wouldn't say it's rude, we'd say it's cute. Right? You know, so that's the point, is that it's the attitude that makes it. So it's not that he's a monkey, he doesn't wear any clothes, then who's going to complain? Like that. Does that make sense? So that's not the point. The point is that it's rude because of his mentality. So that's the kind of, that's the thing you want to catch. So that's what the acharyas are bringing out. So sometimes that we put too much emphasis on the secondary, then we get distracted by that and we forget the actual point. That's why the acharyas, when they're using it, they're bringing out the particular glory. So it's not that, oh, see how I can express this word in so many different ways. Aren't I a great scholar? But they're bringing out, he's either praised by his relatives and all people, or he's being praised by the best of devas and sages, or it means he's going into the city with all his devotees who have that great appreciation for him. So it can mean all that, because it was all going on at once. And so just by saying the word that one time, in that context, it can mean all three of these, because all three are going on. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So sometimes we'll think, oh, it's not so exact, so it's not so technical. And so it's not actually very elevated. No, it's actually more elevated, because scholasticism means that you're good at the basics. The scholasticism is actually for the personal interactions, which means the poetics. So if you know scholasticism and not poetics, then it's not actually that elevated. It means you take the common person, of course it's more elevated, but you take those who are actually educated, it's a beginning level. Does that make sense? And we see is that at some point, that pride, if that's there, it'll always make a problem. So in all these, there's no pride. It's just, that's real, because pride is false. You may be good at something, but there's always someone better, so why be proud? It's just one has that particular strength or ability. That's why it works. Does that make sense? So all these different things come into play when all this is being expressed. So that's why the grammatical aspects, as long as they add to that primary aspect, then they're very much appreciated. But if they start to distract from it because of, you know, the scholarliness or because of pride, then it's actually better it's not so fancy. You know, it's like that, what is it, Keshav Kashmiri and Lord Chaitanya? You know, he reeled off 100 verses about the Ganga just on the spot. You know, who can do that? You know, some might sit there and ho and hum and pick together one verse or just 100 off like this. And, you know, and so then who can do that? Right? Basically, nobody can do that. But at the same time, Lord Chaitanya listened to them all, and he says, yeah, in the, I think it was 51st verse or something like that.
49th.
49th verse. Then he said, the 49th verse in this line, in this word, then you used it like this, but actually that doesn't mean it's contradictory, so that's not very good poetics. So he was completely defeated because, one, who can say 100 verses? Two, who can listen to all of them, remember them all, and then break it down and analyze it? Because it wasn't that he finished and then Lord Chaitanya sat there and thought and like that. It's just as soon as he finished it, so what did you think? Well, it was nice, but what about this?
And he spoke under the speed of the wind.
Yes, yeah. So it just goes. In other words, he just started talking. It wasn't like he puts together the word and then, well, this, no, maybe this, and go. No, it's just like he's just as if he's speaking like that.
And Maharaj, each line four mistakes it finds.
Each line four mistakes.
In the word, four lines. Each line four mistakes it finds. It was like.
Yeah. So then you go. You just keep going through. Yeah. So that's what Lord Chaitanya would go down to the ghat. You know, at lunchtime, when they all go down to take the moon bath, say the Gayatri and all that, then they would, you know, because they're all grammarians, right? Because it's Navanyaya, so it's even more better at logic than the old Nyaya that Gautama gave. Then it's even a development of that. It's based on the same principles, but there's how you'll argue has been developed more. And so then the students loved to go down and argue. So he'd start arguments, and then he'd defeat whatever anybody could come up with. Then he would go back and defeat whatever he said. You know, show that. So like that, if he could just keep going. Because that's the point, is that he makes his logic has its limit, because however good it is, someone else is better. That's the whole point of the material. Whoever you are, there's someone better. You know, so even you can say, no, but Brahma's the best. But then didn't Krishna show him that also? Is that he did that twice to him, right? So then at the Brahma Vimohan Leela, he brought in all these Brahmas from all the other universes. And then when he went to visit Dwarka and he said, you know, they asked who's come, and he said, you know, tell the Lord Brahma is here. And then the guy comes back and said, he asked which one? What do you mean which one? I'm the only one here. And then he looks around, then there's all these others, right? You know, and then he's got the smallest amount of heads, right? He's got four heads, right? While the others have, you know, hundreds, thousands, millions of heads, like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This particular pastime of Lord Balaram, he's with the young boys of Vraja. And even Revati is being mentioned, you know? So,
Did it say it's the young girls of Braja?
Yes.
Because this seems to be in the in Raivata Mountain, but isn't?
15.
Yeah, but isn't Raivata next to that I know of? It's down near Dwarka.
It's near Dwarka, that's right.
Yeah, so this could be another pastime. You know, or he took all his gopis down there, and then Revati's there. It's Balaram, so why worry about, you know, the location of it? Because you can see is when he tells stories, sometimes you put different stories together, mm-hmm. sometimes this and that, because it's the same principle, it's always going on. My point is why do you have to think about that one? The point is about Balaram killed Dvidvida gorilla. That's the important thing to appreciate. You know what I'm saying? Because if we get into those things, we'll always get the set. That's what I mean by we overemphasize the secondary, because there must be something in that, why that's going on. So if the acharyas explain it, nice, we know. And if they don't explain it, then we don't worry about it, because they don't explain it because either it's not important or we wouldn't understand. You know, we have enough trouble with the prakat and apakat, like in the, what do you call it? The Uddhava going to Vrindavan. It goes back and forth between the two. He sees the scene as the you know, the apricot, that Krishna's there in Vrindavan. But when he interacts with the Brajvasis, then he's interacting with them in Prakat, where Krishna's not there. You know what I'm saying? So that these two are going on at once, then, and interchangeable. Does that make sense? And that, you know, in that, then they don't see each other. So they're there. So then Krishna's there in the one, but they Mother Jashoda that's in the prakat doesn't see Krishna in the apricot. And so she's interacting there. And he, so, like that. So that's why then they how much, you know, our pea-sized brains can accommodate, then that's how much they give. Because it's not a matter of logic, it's a matter of appreciating Krishna. Because if you appreciate Krishna, you know, it's like that that story of the Brahmin and the cobbler, you know, with Narad Muni. He said, I'm going to Vaikuntha, is there anything you want? They both ask, you know, tell us what the Lord's doing, you know, like that. So when he comes back, then he tells the Brahmin that he's threading, what is it?
An elephant
through the eye of a needle. So then that Brahmin gets upset in all this. And then the cobbler, he just says, wow, Supreme Lord can do anything, right? I have enough trouble getting, you know, a thread for doing the shoes through the needle, and he can get an elephant through that. Right, he's God. You know, it's like, I can't do it. And so then he went back to Godhead, and the Brahmin stayed here. So that's the whole point, is logic has its limit. Its logic is satisfied in that if we see it in connection to the Lord, the logic is satisfied. But if we don't see it in the connection to the Lord, logic can't be satisfied, because logic is just a mechanical tool. You know, it's like, how do you satisfy your frying pan or your pot scrubber? You know, it's not possible. But if you see it in connection with Krishna, then everything's perfect. Does that make sense? So we use logic and all that, but we have to know where the point is, where it's beyond. Right? So since they didn't bring it out, then at this point we don't worry about it. It'll be brought out at some other point, or, you know. Yeah, because here's just one second. What happened here? Yeah, because it says return to his capital. Yeah, well, Dwarka is his capital. Yeah, so, I mean, Brudge is not his capital. That's home.
And Pivida is destroying Saurashtra. Saurashtra.
Yeah, Saurashtra is that side. Saurashtra and Anartha, those are all...
Actually, Dwarka and Saurashtra was... previously called as Amrita province.
Yes, that's the meaning. Yeah. So then, how about those words? Yeah, so that's the point. He wanted to know about Balaram, so he's telling all these different things. So he's because this is not in a chronological order. Just like before, he's told others, and then he asked more, so he goes back and tells some other stories. So it could be that this one is a previous story to the one, because the previous one, the previous chapter was Vrindavan, and he finished that, and it says that he left and went back to Mathura.
Because common thing is drinking Varuna liquor.
Yeah, and Balaram and girls, right? So then we're putting together, but that's another story, because he asked more stories about Balaram. And so now he's telling another one where he's on Raivata Mountain. Because that's the Dwarkavasis, when they wanted to go and have kind of an open outing, they would go to Raivataka Mountain.
Because Raivataka Mountain comes second time also. When Jarasim is chasing and the two brothers climb the Raivataka Mountain, he puts it on fire.
Yes, that's there. But also you see is that when Arjuna kidnapped Subhadra, they were out there having, because after Chaturmas, they'd been on the island all that time, so then they went after and then went to the mainland and were having, you know, some, you know, a social program there. And because it was, you know, all that formal things and Subhadra go to the temple and all that, then it was worked out that Arjuna would come and kidnap her. Right? And so like that. So the point is Raivataka's there. So it's just because you have Balaram, Varuni, and girls doesn't necessarily mean it's the same time frame. So this could have been before he visited Vrindavan. It could have been after. It's not clear here. That's why modern academics get bent out of shape about Puranas, because they say it's not chronological. In fact, they get bent out of shape just that we use that we're studying the books in a chronological order. Because they say, no, chronology means time. But when we're saying is here is actually, it means just the order of how it's unfolding. So as time-wise that he explained this story, then he explained that. In other words, these 300 stories are explained one after another. That is the chronology of how it was explained. But they want that, no, the story being told are, what is it,
chronologically correct.
Yeah, there was another one just in between I was trying to get, but it didn't work. Chronologicus, whatever. But whatever, so therefore that's why we've changed the title of this course to the Syriata. Because that one, the academics have to go look it up in their dictionary. It's exactly what we're doing, and that is so satisfying. Yeah. And then the other one, I can't even remember what it is. Syriata and?
Thematic. Thematic.
Yes, but there's a technical name for it, an academic name for that study. Syriata and? Okay. But the Vedanta Sutra, that's that one. You know, that course, the second course is that one. So in our studies, then we have that, because you're supposed to read the scripture from beginning to end, and you're supposed to study it thematically. So the second course is the thematic, and the first course is going from beginning to end of the literature. Does that make sense? Yeah. So my point is that the scholarship has its limit in understanding the Lord. In other words, scholarship is a tool to be used to appreciate, but it's not that by scholarship you can understand. That's the big mistake that those who are intelligent have. It doesn't matter whether Vedic, non-Vedic, anything. They always think that my brain is the real thing, just like Duvida. He thinks he's strong, so he's stronger than anybody. Because it's whatever you're doing, you're thinking whatever I'm doing is the most important, therefore. Does that make sense?
Krishna is telling you, Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktya Mama Bhijanati. Only through bhakti you can understand.
Yes, only through bhakti. Because the point is, as Krishna reveals, when he sees us make the endeavor, he reveals. You know, but if we don't make the endeavor, then how is he going to reveal? He could make everybody God conscious. But the point is by his desire and will that we make that endeavor, and then he reciprocates, because then it's a relationship. Otherwise he just does it. It's only situational. So now what? Okay, he made us God conscious. Now what? But if we make the endeavor and he reciprocates that, then there's some meaning there. Is that
So now in the Canto 10 we see quite a few times that the Acharya gives different explanation. Is it because Canto 10 is more about rasa, it's more about poetry?
When you said all will be, but it may not be that there needs to be any more meanings meant. That when the Lord performs a pastime, then depending upon the nature of the individuals involved, there'll be more or less things happening. Like you see when he goes into Mathura, that when he goes into the wrestling arena, there's so many things are going on at once. And then Vrindavan, you have the same thing. You know, when he comes back from the cows, then there's Mother Jashoda, there's the gopis, there's the cowherds, there's the cow, there's different groups and all just how they interact with him. Does that make sense? So from that, then you get so many different flavors that are there. So if it's something that a variety of rasas that are being brought out, then that's something to bring out at this point. Then they'll mention those. But if it's not, it's just that's not the point being made. It's just some other specific thing. Then you may not see that wide range that is there. Yeah, it's one of those, you know, you remember you don't accept the Krishna. Because it's a word that you don't hear. Because these words people don't hear. So those who, you know the field, then that'll mean something to them. Because they're like, it's like these certain philosophical words that, you know, how you say Catholicism has. They have some very exact words that no one ever uses. And they mean a very specific thing. You know, how you say...
Tabernacle?
That'll go back. That'll be even older. That'll go back to the Old Testament. But they'll be talking about some philosophical points and all that. Because I think they at one point in the Middle Ages then merged their philosophy with Aristotle, trying to make it more acceptable to the intellectuals. And so then so many fancy words came out of that.
Limbo,
huh?
Limbo.
Limbo, but there's really big words. We don't even hear about them. We have to look them up. So like that, then there are terms. Because we have to remember, ultimately, English is a form of German, so it used to have very exact meanings. Now it's a bit, how you say, laissez-faire, so it's not as not as exact as it used to be. Okay. He was the benefactor of all people, Bhagavan. That was the reason for killing Duryodhana and being praised, right? Because Duryodhana is bothering everybody, so by killing him, then he benefits everybody. And because of that, everyone is praising him for doing that, because no one else could deal with him. It is understood that he freed the people imprisoned by Duryodhana in the valleys and caves. Though Duryodhana caused great disturbance, he was subdued and the city was continuously peaceful. So then he corrects everything. Because that's one of the things he comes. Because if it wasn't a big thing, why would the demigods be showering praises and everything? The flowers. Because he was someone that even the demigods couldn't control. So then when the Lord kills these persons, then everybody in the universe is happy. You know. Except maybe, you know, Vita's friends. Conclusion. In offending great personalities results in bad association, which leads to further offenses. Right? So that's just how the process path works. Right? So it's not that going to hell in a bucket is just you and your bucket. It's you, your bucket, and all the other bad people who you like to associate with and their buckets. And then in that way you can all go together. So it's a party. Right? Yeah. Chapter 68, The Marriage of Samba. Pratigya, material opulence makes a man exactly like an animal. So that's the thing, it seems that he's going up by materially progressing, but if it's not connected to Krishna, he's actually going down in consciousness.
Is there a pastime in the ahead of this that he goes back to like Lord Ram and Maktis or something? Like, because he served Lord Ram before?
So it mentioned that he's one of the eternalists, he's one of the associates of the Lord, so he'll go back to that position, just like Jaya and Vijaya went back to their position.
Okay.
But it doesn't mention it here. The Acharyas mention it. But it's not specifically there, because the question was asked about Balaram, specifically. And so then he's just adding more things to bring out Balaram's pastimes. So I think this one is now also going to be another one. That. This is where he drags.
Yeah,
he drags Hastinapura.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 68 summarizes questions, answers. The rhetorical questions uttered in verses 3, 28, 34 through 39 do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how the Kauravas captured Samba and how Lord Baladev dragged the city of Hastinapur to secure his release. Samba, the darling son of Jambavati, but because Samba, right here, is that he is one of those, he would have spent a lot of time with his mother. That's why his name is Samba, Saamba, with mother. Right, you know, like that. You know, so it's like, you know, it's like sometimes you say someone's he's a mommy's boy, or you know, like that. So this is actually his name.
How would they know?
Huh?
How would they know? Is it usually a name because when he's born?
No, but they may have different names. Yeah. So.
But the name giving ceremony is a bit after, isn't it?
whatever becomes prominent,
because you see some of these great kings that we're dealing with, they have many names like that. Sorry,
Duryodhana's original name was Suyodhana.
Was
Suyodhana?
Suyodhana. And then when they fought, he was more Dur than Su. Yeah.
Dushasan. Parents name him Sushasan, the good governor. But the public realizes Susha, the bad governor.
Yeah. So many have many, many names. Like that. So then Samba is the name that people like to call him. So that's why it says the darling son of Jambavati. So Samba, he's the darling son of Jambavati. So kidnapped Duryodhana's daughter Lakshmana from her Swayamvara assembly. In response, the Kauravas joined forces to arrest him. After Samba held them off single-handedly for some time, six warriors of the Kaurava party deprived him of his chariot, broke his bow to pieces, seized him, tied him up, and brought both him and Lakshmana back to Hastinapur. Now this is... Okay, so this is Samba and Duryodhana's daughter. And then what's the... I can never remember the one. There's that famous one of...
Abhimanyu.
There's Usha and Aniruddha, but then who's the one where it's one where Duryodhana's son was going to marry?
Balaramji's daughter, whom Abhimanyu.
And what was their names? Because you only hear the story in South India.
Her name was Shashireka.
Shashileka.
Reka.
Shashireka. And?
Balaramji's daughter's name.
Oh, that's the whole story about the...
Yeah, yeah, the Maya Bazaar. Oh.
And then... And who
is marrying it? Is
Aniruddha married.
Aniruddha, okay. Aniruddha and Shashireka.
Shashireka. Reka is...
Line.
Shashireka. Okay.
Moon line.
Okay.
And son's name was also there, it was mentioned as Lakshmana Kumar. Same name. Daughter and son. I mean, Duryodhana's son's name was also mentioned as Lakshmana.
Okay.
At least in the movie.
Yeah, somehow or another. Yeah. But if you're quoting Shastra, then, the authority.
The difference is Lakshman and Lakshmana. So it's male and female.
Lakshman and Lakshmana. Yeah. That's somehow or another. I always get them mixed up, these two. So Lakshman was going to marry Shashireka. But it didn't work out, and Aniruddha married her. Okay. In fact, she was already married to Aniruddha. Abhimanyu was already married to Abhimanyu. Okay, so Arjuna's son.
Arjuna's son.
Okay, so that's right, because they said that they were cousins when they found it out, and they had a plan. Yeah. Okay.
Whose daughter was she?
Duryodhana's?
Balaram's
daughter. Like that, because he always favored Duryodhana, so then Duryodhana's son was the marriage. Just the same way here, Duryodhana's daughter, Lakshmana, probably had someone else in mind, and then yes. Samba came in. So.
Like Subhadra and Arjuna?
Yes, like that. Somehow or another, when Krishna gets involved, it always works out in a slightly different way than planned. And that's half the fun. They're Kshatriyas, so these things are fun.
Kidnapping is a common thing.
Yeah, so that's the standard thing. Because if the boy kidnaps the girl, means he really wants the girl. Therefore, the girl's very happy about that. Okay. When King Ugrasena heard of Samba's capture, he called upon the Yadavas to retaliate. Angered, they prepared to fight, but Lord Balaram pacified them, hoping to avoid a quarrel between the Kuru and Yadu dynasties. The Lord set off for Hastinapur, together with several Brahmanas and Yadava elders, right? Instead of going with the whole, you know, or the whole army marching there, then he went himself to, you know, he figured conciliation would be the better way.
It's okay.
The party of Yadavas set up camp in a garden outside of the city, and Lord Balaram sent Uddhava to ascertain King Dhritarashtra's frame of mind. When Uddhava appeared in the court of a court and announced Lord Balaram's arrival, the Kauravas worshipped Uddhava and went to see the Lord, taking auspicious items to offer him. The Kauravas honored Balaram with rituals and items of respect. But when he conveyed Ugrasena's demand that they release Samba, they became angry. It is very amazing, they said, that the Yadavas are trying to give orders to the Kauravas, right? Because you have Sun and Moon dynasty, so Moon always is subservient to the Sun dynasty. This is like a shoe trying to climb atop one's head. It is from us alone that the Yadavas have attained their royal thrones, and yet now they are presuming themselves our equals. No longer will we extend to them royal privileges. Having said this, the Kaurava nobles went inside their city, and Lord Baladev decided that the only way to deal with those who are maddened by false prestige is through brute punishment. Thus he took his plow weapon and, intending to rid the earth of all the Kurus, began dragging Hastinapur towards the Ganges. So this is the opposite. Before it was dragging the river to him, and now is he taking the city to the river. Seeing that the city was in imminent danger of falling into the river, the terrified Kauravas quickly brought Samba and Lakshmana before Lord Balaram and began to glorify him. Then they prayed, "O Lord, please forgive us, who are so ignorant of your true identity." Baladeva assured the Kauravas he would not harm them, and Duryodhana presented various wedding gifts to his daughter and new son-in-law. Then Duryodhana extended his greetings to the Yadavas, requested Lord Baladeva to return to Dwarka with Samba and Lakshmana. Well, if you found that the whole city that you were in with fortresses and everything is being dragged by one guy with a plow to the river, you know, you'd be convinced quite quickly also. Shloka Hisharam, summary of verses. 1 to 12, the Kauravas capture Samba. 13 to 43, Lord Balaram drags Hastinapur towards the Ganges. 44 to 49, the Kauravas pacify Lord Balaram by their prayers. 50 to 54, Lord Balaram returns to Dwarka with a newly married couple. Verses 1 to 12. The Kauravas capture Samba. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, "O King, Jambavati's son Samba, ever victorious in battle, kidnapped Duryodhana's daughter Lakshmana from her Swayambar ceremony." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Duryodhana, the son of Dhritarashtra, had a marriageable daughter by the name of Lakshmana. She was a very highly qualified girl of the Kuru dynasty, and many princes wanted to marry her. In such cases, the Swayambar ceremony is held so that the girl may select her husband according to her own choice. In Lakshmana's Swayambar ceremony, when the girl was to select her husband, Samba appeared. He was the son of Krishna's by Jambavati, one of Lord Krishna's chief wives. This son, Samba, was so named because he was a pet child and always lived close to his mother. The name Samba indicates a son who is very much his mother's pet. Amba means mother, and Sa means with. So this special name was given to him because he always remained with his mother. He was also known as Jambavati Sutta for the same reason. As previously explained, all the sons of Krishna were as qualified as their great father. Samba wanted Duryodhana's daughter, Lakshmana, although she was not inclined to have him. Therefore, Samba kidnapped Lakshmana by force from the Swayambar assembly. Srila Jiva Goswami adds, Harivamsa says, "Krito yadaiva pradyumna sambarenatma gatina tam eva masham sambastu jambavatyam ajayata." When Prajumna was taken by the abductor Shambhara, Samba was born to Jambavati. Since Pradyumna and Sambar were thus of almost the same age, the incident told now actually happened previously. That's what we're saying, is that this is what annoys academics, because why can't it be told in order? You know, as if anybody ever tells everything in order. You know, like that. You know, somehow or another, because it makes it easy for them, because you want to sit in one book, you know, you don't have to go get so many books and like that. Yeah. The story is now mentioned in relation to Balaram's prowess, right? Because he asked for more stories about Balaram. Therefore, this story came up to show Balaram's prowess.
But when these days people say about, they ask, is it an arranged marriage or is it a love marriage? Like they ask that point. But it seems like the Swayamvaras were common, where
They're arranged marriages.
But that's considered arranged marriages.
It's part of the arranged marriage ceremony. It means, in other words, the father's arranged all these things, yeah, and those who are qualified then come, and then from amongst those who are qualified, then she chooses. It's not that unqualified people come along. It's not that Swayamvara means they just open the gates and anybody comes along.
Okay.
Right? You know, it's only those who are qualified, then they come forward. So any one of them that she picks, the father is happy with. Or he does, like we see in Drupad and those ones, like with Krishna and those, forget which wife, maybe it was Lakshmana, he has a wife named Lakshmana also, is that the Swayamvara that she had, it was designed that only Arjuna or only Krishna could do it.
Yeah.
Like that. So that way it's a Swayamvara, but still it's arranged that only this person could qualify.
Today in ISKCON, like, a lot of ladies, they get married, but they choose their own in a way from qualified people, and they have seniors approve that and parents approve that or whatever. So is that, but that's not really a love marriage. So what is that? Is that arranged or not?
It means there's arrangements go on. It's just a matter of there's variety of ways arranged marriage can happen. So it's either the father, by his own work, finds somebody. That's your what do you call it?
Brahma.
Then the father's holding a religious ceremony, and he finds that priest at the ceremony who's qualified, or someone like that that he had never thought about, but then sees that he's qualified. Then he arranges that. Or somebody comes forward and approaches the father and asks about that, and the father's seeing that it's okay between them and the families, then it's arranged. Or the father hasn't been able to arrange something, or in this case the Swayamvara, where he arranges a general assembly and then she chooses, or she herself through her own offices goes and chooses, then the father approves that. Having approved it, then it's put together.
So that's all considered arranged.
That would be all. These are the different varieties of marriages. There's 8 kinds of marriages.
Yeah.
So to say that there's only love, because love is a love marriage is 1 of 8.
Yeah, and that's the exchange of the garlands and nothing else.
Yes.
So that's not.
So my point is that they're limiting down to those 2, but there's much more ways that it happens.
Right.
So that's the difficulty in the modern context, is that they only have, well, is it love, as if the love they're talking about is something glorious.
Yeah.
And on that, or it's arranged, means, you know, it can't be anything nice at all. So it's you know, the all or nothing kind. The love is so perfect that, you know, it works out so wonderfully that at least, in general, 25% of the marriages work out, because these love marriages are so fabulous. And these arranged marriages, I mean, most of them all work. Very few of them fail, but this is so terrible and disgusting and all that, because isn't it so much better to go through a few marriages, and then by the third marriage, then you really know what you're doing, and so you're 50-year-old and get, you know, married for the third or fourth time, and then it works smoothly, and then until death does us part, it actually works. Yeah, you know, so that's the whole point, is that and not enough knowledge is known, so it's just a sentiment, because it's just been saying, if it's a love marriage, it's great, and if it's that, well, what happens if the girl just gets pregnant? Do they love each other? No, it's just they're just doing the needful. You know, unless they're south of the Mason-Dixon line, then there might be a shotgun involved to just make sure it happens. Yes.
And so previously, because the qualities of both the male and female were so much higher, then they were able to, you know, somehow work things out.
Means it'll work. Means whoever marries whoever in these qualified families, it will work. Because they're committed to making it work. So if something's not working, they'll figure out how to make it work. Well, the modern, something goes wrong, I don't like, so you just cancel the whole thing. Right? But the point is here is not you make it work. It's whatever that takes to make it work, you do. Because if it's working, it's good. And if it's not working, it's not good. So working's the better option. So then they'll apply themselves to the working. That makes sense. So that means giving up the false ego, giving up these things, which the modern, they don't want to give up. I want to maintain all my false ego and bad habits and everything, but the marriage should work perfectly, because if they love you so much, they'll accept you for who you are with all your faults. And just look at it that side. But what about if you love them so much, why aren't you giving up your faults and accepting theirs? But it's no. You understand? It's always one person will quote the other way. It means, in other words, the Vedic system is what is my duties I do, and what someone else's duties I don't worry about. The more materialistic kind of mentality is I worry about everybody else's duties, that if everybody else did everything perfectly, then I would be able to do my duties. And the fun part is that the modes of nature, the mode of ignorance, reverses the actual situation. So the modern, then they think, because everybody else has to adjust, then I can function because I'm an independent person. But in actuality, if you look at it, only if everybody else adjusts, then I can function, means I'm totally dependent upon everybody else. When the Vedic system, all adjust means I'm independent. I voluntarily adjusted to make things work. So actually, the Vedic system is independent and the modern is dependent, but the modern will profess that it's independent and the Vedic is dependent. That's the mode of ignorance, as Krishna says. You take religion, say it's non-religion, and take non-religion and say it's religion. That's the mode of ignorance. Mm-hmm. You understand? Okay, so we'll stop here. Today is Monday.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Govinda ki.
Tonight
we have class tomorrow. Yes. Yeah, that's what I was... Oh, when is this whole program going? At what time? What time is the program?
It's not going to be before 9, surely.
Yeah, who knows? Anybody's going to this program?
Is that a meeting
program? The program.
What do you mean?
And then the afternoon? Everybody will be free for the afternoon?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, no? What did you say?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
She came very different.
Yeah.
So. Don't have class at that time.
After the feast, if you can make it over here, then.
It's
Ekadashi. Okay, so it's limited in its feastiness. Huh? Yes, but you have to remember, in Bengal, if there's no rice, it's fasting. You can be stuffed to the gills, you can't eat one more drop, but it's still fasting. That's the way it works. Over here. So, is it like that in South with the rice? I would say there, if it's no yogurt, then it's like, you're going to die.
In Bengal, plain rice. Modern rice also works. Plain rice.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you have a biryani, or that, biryani, that still wasn't it. That's a snack. Yes. Yeah, no, that's the way it works.
If you give lemon rice, they'll ask where is subject.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, where's the tolerance? So that would mean if it's during the month in Chatur Mas where there's no yogurt and it's a codicil, so no rice, in South India they're finished. Right? I guess you could eat banana chips or something.
Maharaj, they make dosa with varai also, Maharaj.
Oh, okay.
I guess you could always eat adais. Right? Oh, not on a car seat.